Welcome to the OA Light a Candle Meeting podcast. Visit our website at oalaig.org, where you will find several speaker feeds with over 800 speaker files, forms for ordering CDs for these speakers, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed on the Light a Candle podcast are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Jenny. Yay!
Hi everybody, I'm Jenny.
Hi Jenny.
I am a compulsive reader bulimic, and on the checklist that I got for signing off on the podcast recording tonight, it asked what you identify as, and body obsessor is on there, so just add that, body obsessor. So thanks Mary Pat for asking me to lead. I'm a little nervous. A little intimidated. And I'm also like super excited because I've never done a podcast. So how cool is that? I listen to a lot of podcasts. So I brought a couple notes for myself, but I doubt I'll look at them. This is my third time around in OA. I have 15 years of abstinence from recreational sugar, which I just... Thank you. I just celebrated that on May 15th, and it is a miracle. Just to give you context for the madness. So I grew up in the Midwest. I'm from Michigan originally, and grew up in a heavily alcoholic home with a lot of dysfunction, not a lot of communication, not a lot of love and care. And I learned very early that food was a comfort and a friend to me. I didn't recognize it as like a coping mechanism, but I saw that mealtime was super extra exciting for me. I was always the one helping set the table because I also got to see what was being served, which if you're from the Midwest and you're as old as I am, some of it wasn't so pretty, but God bless my mom, you know, she got those meals on the table. So as a kid, perhaps like some of you, we didn't talk about feelings. We didn't talk about, we didn't really talk about much.
Yeah.
We talked about like activities. We talked about, maybe what we were gonna do in the summertime, but as far as like day to day, like how was your day, honey? Not happening. I have an older brother and a younger sister, and we were not close. I was the girly girl. My sister was a tomboy. My brother was super butch. And they were all about sports, and I was into like butterflies and gymnastics and just wasn't really connected in the family. So I got into gymnastics at an early age, and that was actually really good for me to have a place to go and to connect with my body. I didn't know what I was doing at the time. I just knew that it felt good to stretch and tumble and do these things. And it really wasn't until I was a teenager that I realized there's something going on with this overtime focus on my body. And what that's turned into is my body, my size, my shape, my body functions, my body pretty much how it looks in clothes. Sizes are a real big part of that for me, which I'll get into a little bit, but I did not feel good about myself. I wasn't somebody that knew really that had any self-awareness. And a lot of that comes from the home. You know, you see yourself mirrored in your family or in your friends, and that gets reinforced by your activities. And God knows we didn't talk about anything else. So all I had was my activities. So I was an okay gymnast. And what I learned early is that I deferred my feelings. I don't think I knew I was deferring my feelings. It's like I didn't have any. And, you know, you get up in the morning, you get dressed, you go do your thing, and you come home, and it's chaos, and people are drunk, and I'm like a little kid trying to navigate my way through this. And I don't think I thought anything was wrong until I thought something was wrong. Later in my teenage years, I remember thinking, I wonder if the other moms and dads, like, do they drink and pass out at night? Like, is that what, like, Mary DeRose's parents do? Sorry, Mary, not DeRose. Pamela's, you know, Terry's, like, do their parents do that too? Because I don't know. Cut to, I had a pretty rich fantasy life and dreams about moving somewhere else, pretty much anywhere else. When I was 17, I ended up graduating high school early, and I left for a year with this traveling group that was kind of like educational, but there was a lot of song and dance, and I really started connecting with theater and performance. And I thought, oh, this feels good. This feels good to be on stage. This feels good to be like, jazz hands, you know, like I can perform. That is one thing I can do. Although standing here, I'm like, I really can't. So I thought that was going to be, you know, my career. So I pursued dance and music for a little while, and I sort of got my butt kicked. It really brought out an eating disorder in me that was maybe under the skin, but suddenly I was being asked to get on a scale for like regular weigh-ins. I got this summer job at a theme park, and I was, they did what they called surprise weigh-ins. I know, it just sounds horrible. And supposedly it was under the guise of making sure that we maintained our costumes, that we didn't get too big or too small. I'm like, please. Anyway, so the eating disorder just came on, raging, overeating, and bulimia. And the surprise weigh-ins became like the extra kind of monster in the closet. And then what I figured out is that if I waited until the surprise weigh-in, that night I could binge, because there was at least going to be 3 to 5 days between the next surprise weigh-in and this one. So really a small life and a really body-centric, weight-centric, looks-centric way of being. And what that ended up kind of me pointing me toward is I wanted to pursue being a professional singer and dancer, and I started auditioning, and I wasn't getting parts. And one of the auditions was in Detroit. I had to drive to Detroit with some of my dancer friends, and they all got asked back except me. And I say that like it's something shameful, but I mean, probably a bunch of you in this room know what casting is, and sometimes you're just not right for the part. But for me, it was like, oh, I'm too fat. Oh, that's the problem. I don't look the way they want me to look. So I'm going to go home and binge. And I remember that was like a 5-day, like down and out, not talking to anybody behind closed doors, and pretty dark for me. And about that time, I had a friend who wanted me to go to this Unity Church with him. And it was metaphysical, kind of all paths lead to God, so not necessarily one particular religion, but it was helpful for me. And they had an OA meeting at that church. So I'm like, I don't know, 19 years old, and I go to this meeting, and it's all women that are like 30 years older than me. None of them have a body weight that's something I would aspire to. They're looking at me like, you don't need to be here. And I'm like, you don't understand. You don't understand what I do with food. And then I heard them speak. And I thought, oh my God, I'm Shirley. I'm Jim. I'm Donna. I do the same thing. I just have a different way of expressing my eating disorder. And I was a volume eater. And that started to catch up with me. So in a sad way, but also a life-saving way, I sort of changed direction to move away from trying to use my body as my vehicle for making a living. So being a dancer was not really something that I could emotionally handle. Nobody said that. I say it now like, oh, like I had some awareness, but I didn't. I just knew like it scared me. It made me feel bad. So I'm going to do something else. So I went back to school, left OA because, you know, why do I need to worry about this now? The alcoholism in my family was really kicking my butt again. And I sought assistance through outside help and also another 12-step program that's been really important to my recovery. As I start to look at my part in the way that I live my life and the way that I treat myself, the way that I talk to myself, it's interesting. I have a new sponsee who I'm talking to, and I heard her say out loud what she was telling herself after she made a mistake. And I said, you know, would you talk to your friend? Would you talk to your niece like that? Would you say those words to another person? She said, absolutely not. I said, so I just, you know, I think it's important to start to get in touch with the narrative that's going on. Because I'm quick to say, I'm wrong, I'm bad. And I had all kinds of other descriptors for that. But the self-harm that I inflicted on myself, I wasn't even aware of till I came back to OA. So there's a lot of years in there where I wasn't really doing anything with the program. I was hating myself, hating my body, obsessing about food, obsessing about my body, shopping, buying one size and then buying the next size and then just buying one more size up because I didn't really want it to be that obvious that I was changing sizes. So maybe if I wear the same kind of thing in the two sizes down or the two sizes up, I won't notice. I tried cutting tags out, but that didn't really make sense for me. So coming back into OA, my first sponsor was somebody that was talking to me about the anorexic bulimic side of things. And because when I came into program, I wasn't actively bulimic, I'm like, oh yeah, I got that. Well, I didn't have that because part of the obsession for me included this constant negotiating, like, am I up, am I down? If I'm up, I gotta just bring it back down a little bit, but if I'm down, I can bring it back up again. And maintenance was just not in my vocabulary. It was always either up or down. And it was the same 5 or 10 pounds that haunted me in a way that created madness in my head. And one of the things that happened pretty early on is that I listened to the sponsor and I heard people in the rooms talking about not eating sugar. And I'm like, oh, that's hilarious. No sugar, right? Wait, what? You don't eat sugar? But like, what about birthdays? What about holidays? What about, you know, special celebrations? I don't understand. And it really took for me to see that sugar was a problem for me when I started to be able to look at my eating behavior. So there are certain things that I would eat, excuse me, that I couldn't stop eating. And I just thought, you know, the people that can eat two of something were kind of weird, and like I didn't understand. Like, my mom's one of those people, right? Oh, just eat half. Like, who are you? There's no half. So the sugar very early on was kind of revealed to me that that's part of what took me down the rabbit hole. So I just kind of said, I'm going to try this for a while. I'm going to try not eating desserts. And I remember that first summer going home, and it's funny because I'm going back to Michigan in like a week and a half, and it was the 4th of July, you know, picnic on the beach. And of course, it's buffet, and everybody brings all the things that they bring to those things. And not having what I would have previously stood at the table and continued to scoop out and spoon out and go back around the other way so maybe somebody wouldn't notice me, or maybe take my sweatshirt off so they don't recognize me because I was up there with the pink shirt and now I'm going to go with the blue shirt. But that first summer when I was gifted with abstinence from recreational sugar was such a relief. And I didn't know that giving it up comes from God. You know, I had to be willing to say, I don't know how to do this. I can't just eat a little. So the only way I can do it is either all or nothing. And the all, I know where that takes me. So we're going to try the no sugar. And it's 15 years later, guys. Now, thank you, kind of, because here's the thing. Okay, so no sugar. So then what else? How else can I get around this? How else can I cheat the system? Because that's what I do. I want the treat. I want the escape. I want the ability to just sort of like get out of my head for a minute. So I laugh about it now, but like there was the year of tortilla chips. There was the year of butter. There was the year of sugar-free. Repeat, rinse, repeat. And I say that because I had to cycle through all of those parts of my illness up to and including right now. I have a brand new sponsor, and I had hesitated getting a new sponsor because my former sponsor had a medical situation and wasn't really available. And I'm like, I can't just leave her now. But she really wasn't available to sponsor me. She's still in my life and very important to me. But having someone to talk to about the program, about the steps, about what I'm doing, about what I can do, what am I willing to do, what am I not willing to do, it's been life-altering. And I am trying out no sugar-free. And I say that because 15 freaking years later, I'm still negotiating. And, you know, I wish I had like this really clean, pristine record to tell you that I got abstinent immediately and I had, you know, the sunshine through the clouds and all of a sudden I was at peace and loved my body. Nope, that is not what happened. But little by little, the more I adhere to what I believe is God's will for me, to not lose myself in those foods and the overeating and then the body obsession and then the self-hatred, that allows me to live in the body that I have and be in the room where I am and to look at the faces in front of me and to feel the feelings that I have. And I couldn't do that before. I could not feel my feelings in the moment. You know, something would happen and like 3 days down the road, I'd be like, God, that guy, you know, that really made me mad. Well, yes, it did. And you just spent, you know, a couple of days not feeling very good about yourself. So my willingness through the years has kind of ebbed and flowed, you know, and I go back to, you know, my basic abstinence, which is sugar, and recommit to that every day. I do not do that no matter what. The sugar-free, I've been calling my sponsor and saying, I really want sugar-free food. And that is, not something that I really want to say out loud. You know, like I still want to keep it in my back pocket just in case one night I want to stop at Gelson's and run home and close the door and not talk to anybody and have my little getaway. But that getaway separates me from the life that God wants for me. So I want to talk about God for a second. I came into the rooms not really understanding that a higher power could be personal, that God maybe had room for me and my struggles and also my triumphs. And it took me, and it continues to evolve for me. It takes me getting quiet and saying a life-changing prayer for me is the prayer of St. Francis, also known as the 11-step prayer. I use that every day in my life to be shown and to remember that it is in forgiving that I'm forgiven. And I remember when that clicked for me, and I swear to God, they were just words for a really long time. And then when I got that I was being so hard on others because I was so hard on myself. You know, there was no room for me to make a mistake because the thoughts, the narrative that I had in my head were so negative that it hurt. You know, it hurt when I made a mistake. So trying to be perfect, which by the way is impossible. So screwing up was sort of a painful evolution for me to be able to say, all right, you know what? I kind of totally missed the boat on that thing. And then to be able to transmute that into, oh, that guy that I work with, when he came back and he apologized for missing the meeting or not getting the Excel spreadsheet correctly done, he's allowed, just like I'm allowed, to make mistakes. And having compassion for myself and for others started to open up more room for me to have people in my life that were maybe more interesting, artistic, funny, funky. I also got to see that part of me that wanted to be a little more liberated. So the freedom that comes with acceptance and acceptance of myself and my imperfections is a gift. It's a gift. So I want to talk about the tools for a second. So, you know, we've got these 9 tools in OA, and one of my sponsors used to say to me, if you can like touch three of those in a day, you're good. So I'm thinking, because I'm a perfectionist, I need to do all nine every day, including all the outreach programs, get to a meeting, get to this, do the writing, do the reading, do the And guess what? I get to meetings a couple times a week. I call my sponsor. I now have a sponsee, two sponsees, actually. I make my calls. I'm abstinent. I have a food plan. I use the telephone. I pray to my higher power. I am taking action in my program. And that's enough. That is enough. It doesn't have to be perfect. I use this term with myself and also my sponsees. My goal is to achieve harm reduction. Because the idea of going from 0 to 100, which would be perfection, not possible. But if I can reduce the harm that I did to myself on a daily basis, and whether that's just a thought, if that's a negative thought that I have about myself or someone else, if that's the extra serving, yep, that's what it is that day. I can look at my program as an equation and see the things that I'm doing that are helping to kind of shore up that equation. And I brought just a little piece of literature that I wanted to share, because I'm reading this like I've never read it before, and it's in the writing in the AA 12 and 12, step 4, and it's just part of a line. And the line is, whenever a human being becomes a battleground for the instincts, there can be no peace. Wow. Okay, so my instincts have run riot as it relates to my food, my body obsession, my weight obsession, my size obsession. So what do I get to do with that? I get to hand it over to my higher power. I actually gave myself, with God's help, a moratorium on shopping. Huh, imagine that. Not to say I haven't been in a store, but I have not purchased. And that's unbelievable to me. The battleground for my instincts. Sometimes my first instinct is to not be kind. And some of that comes from me, because I don't feel kindly toward myself. If I can take a breath and consider, no, kindness actually has value in my life. I appreciate, I lean toward the kindness now, instead of trying to stay in the roughness, in the aggressiveness. On the next page, this is page 45 in step 4, it talks about being swamped with guilt and self-loathing. You can see this is a common thread for me. We wallow in this messy bog, often getting a misshapen and painful pleasure out of it. It was just such a normal for me to go to that place of, well, there it is again. And other people can be happy. Other people can be free. Other people can be relieved of the obsession. But I guess I'm that one that can't be helped. So, cut to new sponsor, new commitments. I'm not doing sugar-free. I'm praying. I'm reading the literature like it's through a new pair of glasses. And feeling like it's all been right there. It's been there the whole time. And I didn't want to feel it. I didn't want to read it. I didn't want to see it. Because it's hard. And I'm making fun of myself, but you know what? It is hard. And on any given day, it would be great to be able to just walk out there and go bananas with something kooky for myself. But I know where that leads, right back to the demoralization. And there's a lot more softness there today. There's a lot more kindness toward myself and others. And I never imagined that I could have peace. I just figured I'm just like an anxious person. I just, my first response is, you know, a little bit aggressive. Well, I was listening to someone in the car today, and it was like this perfect LA moment, thank you, where she's driving and she's saying, oh my God, that guy, honk, honk, get out of my way, what is going on? What? And I'm like, where do you have to be? Well, I'm going to, you know, exercise. I'm like, well, is it a time deadline? No, just frustration. And I think that was my go-to response a lot, just frustration. And I didn't know how to deal with it. So food was a great soother for me. And what I'm learning without the food still, 15 years later, is that there can be soothing without having something crunching in my mouth. The friendships that I've made in these rooms fill me up. I have a funny story about my first meeting back 15 years ago. I cried the entire meeting, and this woman came up to me after the meeting, and she's a heavy Southern accent, and she said, oh, honey, don't worry about the tears. You're just hydrating your heart. And I'm like, who talks like that? And get me away from here. Like, that's creepy. Anyway, that woman is one of my dearest friends today, which I kind of laugh about because it's a perfect example of how judgmental I was coming in the doors, and that there was no room to just accept myself, accept you as you are, accept that I have an eating disorder that requires daily maintenance. And that daily maintenance for me is being mindful of the tools, making my phone calls, doing my outreach, getting to my meetings, connecting with my higher power in a way it's changed for me of late. My job situation has changed, so I have a lot more time on my hands. And I think I was afraid of what I might do with that time, that I would use it to negatively somehow hurt myself. And typically that would be with food. That is not happening. And it feels like I have this invitation to get to know myself today a little bit differently than what and who I was, you know, a few years ago. So acceptance and the healing power of forgiveness are the things that have really fed my soul and continue to inspire me to stay in the rooms and to listen and to be of service, and just to remember that, you know, I came into this room because I was having trouble coping with my eating disorder, with my relationship with myself, and how to be in the world and navigate that. And today I feel like I have guidelines and I have self-love that's available to me that wasn't. I have some kindness toward myself and others, and a great willingness to pay it forward. And that's the tacit agreement in here. You know, we give away what we've been so freely given. And with that, I'm going to stop. Thank you. Do I read this next part?
Oh, no.
Oh, okay. Time for questions. Hi.
Hi. Hi, thank you for your lead. When you talked about feeling all that pain when you would make a mistake, how did you handle that pain in the moment as you were evolving away from that behavior?
Good question. How do I handle, and sometimes still do, handle the pain of the moment without hurting myself? Sometimes I have to say it out loud, like, wow, that kind of hurt my feelings. I don't like it when someone talks to me like that. Or, like, I'll give you an example. Rough week at work. I'm exhausted. I don't know what to do with myself, but I feel crummy. So my first idea for years was, I'm gonna go shopping. That's a great idea because I'm already exhausted. I'm gonna go shop and walk around the store for an hour and a half. So I'm not just exhausted, now I'm like, you know, walking dead. So the current answer for that is, I'm trying to listen to that part of me that gets my feelings hurt. I'm trying to listen to, even sometimes when I don't know what's drawing me toward, like, I really want to eat something, but I just ate lunch. Feeling my feelings, which probably sounds kind of silly, but recognizing that I deserve to have my response to things, because I think before I didn't think I got to have an opinion. I needed to just take it. So being able to take a position, be able to take a position on something, and, you know, putting a little bit more value on who I am as a person, who God wants to be, me to be as a person. Does that answer? No?
No, I meant when you make a mistake.
Now. Oh, when I?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so I was getting more to just feeling crummy. I would say after I get over the, oh my God, I just, you know, embarrassed myself in front of these people, or I just said the wrong thing at a meeting, or I submitted something with a typo or whatever it is, forgiving myself first and saying, oh my God, I did that thing that I'm so bonkers about other people not doing. I just did it. So what I try to do is see myself in others and maybe see myself as they see me, hopefully through that lens of kindness. I had a boss that had a particular issue. I mean, I did too as a boss. If there was a typo in a presentation, and it was DEFCON 5, right? And I don't know. I guess I just had to make room for myself to screw up. Give a little space for that. Yeah. Questions? Yeah.
So what is non-recreational
sugar? What is non-recreational sugar? I think when it occurs naturally in a food, so fruit, I don't drink milk, but there's milk sugar that occurs in dairy products. I don't know, there might be somebody else in this room that can answer that better than I can, but yeah.
Oh, thanks. Thank you for your lead. I really appreciate it. You talk a lot about kindness for self and others, and I wonder how you are going about laying boundaries in a kind way with other people.
Great question. How do I go about laying kindness with others? I have an amazing experience with my mother, who was an alcoholic, who could get kind of mean, And I can't even tell you how many hours and how many thousands of dollars I spent in therapy trying to deal with it. And I had to get to a point where I was willing to go through the pain of rejection in order to lay a boundary. And I'll give you the specific example. My mom was out visiting from Michigan, and she had made some unreasonable request, and I declined, and then she kept pushing me, like, why don't you want to go to San Juan Capistrano? What did they ever do to you? And I'm like, hey, if you want to go to San Juan Capistrano, here are my car keys. Please go, but I don't want to spend a whole day in the car doing that. And somehow or another, not fighting her, but just saying, yes, but that's not going to be for me, was super helpful. So I feel like there's this kind of, there's this edge that I'm on some days where someone might say something to me and I'm like, ooh, I didn't like that. And I'll either choose to say something or not, but knowing that anybody else in my life is welcome to their response to me saying, no, thank you. I don't appreciate that. I've had people try to, like, feed me. I had this girls weekend where, and this was not a very graceful way of setting a boundary, but she was trying to put something in my mouth that I'd already declined. And I sort of like blew up and I said, oh my God, I have an eating disorder. Stop it. And she stopped. So imagine, get it away from me. Anyway, we're good? Yes. Okay. Thank you so much. Oh, good. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you want to take the show?
It is now time for our second tradition.